This ministry is supported by the members and friends of First Unitarian Church of Des Moines. If you would like to support future podcasts, go to www.ucdsm.org to make your contribution.
So it's good to be back with you this morning. It's good to be back. I thank you once again for the gift and the privilege of a sabbatical, a time of lying fallow, a time of professional and personal growth, a time of being blessedly free for a few months from so many of the responsibilities my ministry that I share with you holds. While I was away, I attended workshops, I read books, I got to tackle some of the tasks around the house I've been neglecting, though much to my daughter's dismay, I didn't really cut into that idea she had that I take a dad redoes the attical for my sabbatical. I think she'll forgive me. And I got to spend some precious time nurturing my relationships with my wife and my daughters. People have been asking me since I have returned to the office about a week and a half ago how the sabbatical was, and I have to respond, how can it be anything other than great? You know, I only wish our culture more broadly valued this kind of leave-taking so that more of us could experience the benefits of it. I thank you, and my family thanks you. Even with all of the blessings of the sabbatical for me, one of the greatest gifts was that I did not have to be in the pulpit immediately after so many of those horrible events that seemed to pop up every couple of weeks this past summer. I did not have to try to come up with something positive and hopeful to say following the mass shooting in Orlando, the continued senseless murder of black men by law enforcement, the tragic and deadly attacks on police officers, the massacre in Nice. The list just goes on and on, doesn't it? What was there to say in the midst of the onslaught of pain and sadness that seemed to arrive so often? After a while, even the now familiar advice of Mr. Rogers to look for the helpers couldn't soften the impact of humanity's seemingly ever-present disregard for itself. After a while, we just get fatigued from all the bad news, don't we? And there has been the run-up to this year's fall presidential election. I've got to stop taking sabbaticals during run-ups to fall presidential elections. They tend to dominate my thought. The endless social media squabbles, the assumptions that those who don't see the world the way we do are delusional, if not dangerous, leaving us to either lash out or retreat into our bubbles of like-minded opinion where we can be comforted by having our views bounced back to us. I appreciated the satirical news story I saw by Andy Borowitz. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He's kind of like The Onion. And this news story that he wrote had the headline that I think sums it up really well, the headline that reads, "Many Americans are tired of explaining things to idiots." Now, there was a time earlier in my ministry when I might have offered you a sermon on a Sunday like this that would suggest that the solution to what ails us would be to simply listen more to each other, especially to those with whom we disagree, even those we are most convinced are idiots. And that's probably good advice in the end and ultimately needed, at least to a point. And you shouldn't be surprised if I preach a sermon like that sometime soon. However, while I was on sabbatical, I couldn't find the words for that message, and I still can't this morning. I can't ask you to do something I'm not willing to do myself. And the truth is, I don't want to listen to some of the things people are saying right now. I don't want to listen. I don't want to listen to those who think that building an expensive several-story border wall between the U.S. and Mexico will do anything useful for anyone except maybe fence contractors. I don't want to listen to those who claim that Mexican refugees are any more morally deficient or inherently dangerous than anyone else in this country. I don't want to listen to those who make broad-stroke assessments of Islam as being any more fundamentally violent or worthy of suspicion than Christianity or any other major world religion. I don't want to listen to those who want to stoke and play upon fears of terrorism in this country when facts reveal that since the attacks of 9/11, Americans have been no more likely to die at the hands of terrorists than being crushed to death by unstable televisions and furniture. That's true. I don't want to listen to those who are so caught up in dismissals of systemic racism that they think that trumpeting all lives matter or blue lives matter is a necessary or helpful counterpoint to black lives matter. As if those of us giving voice to the inequities experienced by black people in this country are somehow denying that everyone else matters too. As if. I don't want to listen to those who reject the tsunami of scientific opinion that climate change is real, impacted by human behavior, and poses a significant threat to the planet and to life as we know it. I don't want to listen to those proclaiming that we need to make America great again, even as they cannot successfully point to an era that is, for any humans other than some white males, any better than the era in which we are living right now. I don't want to listen to those who are trying to scare gun owners into thinking that any elected officials are truly threatening to repeal the Second Amendment. I don't want to listen to those who seek to deny the abundant evidence that gun control has reduced gun deaths in countries around the world. I don't want to listen to those suggesting Second Amendment remedies to any of our nation's problems. And I don't want to listen to those who can't get past their assumption that Hillary Clinton is a criminal, despite literally hundreds of millions of dollars being devoted to a witch hunt against her over the past three decades with no proven criminal wrongdoing. If she is a criminal, she is a true mastermind. I don't want to listen. And that leads me to wonder, have I become, to use an expression popular this election season, temperamentally unfit for my ministry? Well, I've spent more than 15 years now telling you about my theology of creative interchange, the idea that the divine is made real in the world through the open-hearted engagement we have with others, communication with the expectation that we could have our own ideas changed by the encounter, without being open to difference, without prioritizing curiosity over certainty, I have preached to you, we run the risk of becoming stuck in our own perspectives, and the possibility for necessary shifts in those views become limited, if not impossible. But what if I don't want to listen? What if I can't listen? What if I am sick and tired of listening? Can you relate? If you share my theology of creative interchange, do you also wonder whether you are temperamentally unfit to live a faithful life these days? Now, my ministry is public in ways yours may not be. And I do have responsibility as a professional minister to be careful and intentional in how I represent our church and our UU faith. And I have learned even my personal views. This was made clear for me by another progressive-minded colleague many years ago. We were walking back to our cars after participating in an action of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa on behalf of marriage equality. We were at the State House that day before we might say it was cool to do so. My colleague noticed the bumper stickers on my old Toyota I used to drive at the time, one showing my support for another truth-telling politician from Vermont, a man named Howard Dean, and one with the message, "End this war," a bumper sticker protest of the Iraq War. My colleague said to me what I thought was a scolding tone, "My ministerial ethics would prevent me from putting stickers like those on my car." "Oh, yeah?" I said. "Well, obviously mine don't." I knew what he meant, though. I knew what he meant. I knew. And I know that many believe that ministers are entrusted to leave space for difference of opinion on political matters. I actually am among them. Still, I wasn't sure that my bumper stickers violated that trust. Over the years, even when I've occasionally wavered into offering what could be considered partisan opinions from the pulpit, or on my bumper, or now on my Facebook page, I too have believed that an important role of a minister is to offer some balance in perspective, especially about politics, to not use the pulpit or other communication means to further isolate our congregation in what even the most objective observer would describe as our left-leaning bubble. I know I would do my ministry a disservice if I merely parrot the perspectives of the Democratic Party, not only because one party will never have exclusive access to the truth, but because a church that preaches partisan politics, especially these days, is a church that will not be able to help us build the bridges that will lead to the beloved community of all souls for which our religion has always strived. As one of our religious forebears from the 16th century, Francis David, famously said, "We need not think alike to love alike." And so I believe if we are living our principles well, our congregation and my ministry in it should offer a spiritual home that's welcoming to all open-minded people, regardless of their politics. I know this. I believe this. I want this. And sometimes we do pretty well. In fact, several years ago, a friend of our church who had attended for a few months while he was in town working on behalf of Republican politicians praised me and our congregation for not being just an outpost for Democratic politics. He said that he had experienced worship at other UU churches as more like rallies of the Democratic Party than church services, and that these congregations had effectively left him with no place to practice his liberal religion without being bombarded with liberal politics. I was glad to hear this affirmation, but I also received his praise with caution because I knew something he didn't. A couple had just left our church earlier that week because they felt like my sermons and our church went too far, too often into liberal politics. You win some, you lose some. Another friend who was inspired by our friendship to start attending the Chicago area UU church where I had served as an intern told me she only ended up lasting in that congregation for about a year because the services, she said, were too often focused on national and global issues rather than on ways, as she put it, that we could better make our way through life. And this friend is liberal in her politics. Even she didn't want to hear so much political stuff on a Sunday. I get it. And so I've tried to be balanced over the years and not make partisan political proclamations from the pulpit. But here I am this morning wondering if I am temperamentally unfit for this commitment. Because today, at least, I can't help myself. I cannot be balanced right now, it seems. This season feels so different to me than any other season in our ministry. In short, I simply cannot be silent about the danger posed to this country by the candidacy of Donald Trump. I cannot be silent about the possibility that this con man, this bigoted, narcissistic, fact-free, wannabe fascist, reckless, feckless blowhard could be our president. There, you see, I'm temperamentally unfit. Or am I? I keep returning to something Earl Fitz used to say. A lot of you remember Fitz. He was a psychiatrist and a longtime member of this church who died in 2009. I miss him so. In his work with veterans who had been experiencing post-traumatic stress disorder, he used to tell them, "What's wrong with you is what's right with you." What's wrong with you, he would say, is what's right with you. Or put another way, as the Reverend William Barber II, the prophetic Christian minister who has led North Carolina's Interfaith Moral Mondays movement, recently pointed out, some issues are not left versus right or liberal versus conservative. They are right versus wrong. Some things are right versus wrong. Could it be that I, and maybe you, have good reasons to be temperamentally unfit right now? When someone like Donald Trump is a major party's nominee for president, could it be that any doubts we might feel about our fitness for a faith of creative interchange are actually evidence that we are more equipped for healing what's wrong in our country than we might think? Could it be that the fatigue and despair and maybe anger that we experience from the overabundance of stories of violence and racism and bigotry and dishonest, if not delusional, political rhetoric is evidence that we are more capable of acting on behalf of a better world than we might believe? Could it be that what's wrong with us is what's right with us? American poet Clarissa Pinkola Estes would say yes. More than a decade ago, she wrote a letter that has been reprinted many times since, a letter that still reads as if she could have written it today. In it, she encourages a young activist to not lose heart and offers guidance to all of us who may be feeling temperamentally unfit these days. She writes, "I have heard from so many recently who are deeply and properly bewildered. Ours is a time of almost daily astonishment and often righteous rage over the latest degradations of what matters most to civilized, visionary people. You are right in your assessment," she says. "The luster and hubris some have aspired to while endorsing acts so heinous against children, elders, everyday people, the poor, the unguarded, the helpless is breathtaking. Yet I urge you, I ask you, gentle you, to please not spend your spirit dry by bewailing these difficult times. Especially, do not lose hope. Most particularly because the fact is, we were made for these times." She says, we were made for these times. In any dark time, she says, there is a tendency to veer toward fainting over how much is wrong or unmended in the world. Do not focus on that. There is a tendency, too, to fall into being weakened by dwelling on what is outside your reach, by what yet cannot be. Do not focus there. Ours is not the task of fixing the entire world at once, but of stretching out to mend the part of the world that is within our reach. Now, mending the world does not, of course, begin with denouncing a candidate like Donald Trump. But it doesn't end there either. Mending the world, as Estes writes, is helped by any small, calm thing one soul can do to help another soul, to assist some portion of this poor, suffering world. She continues, "What is needed for dramatic change is an accumulation of acts. We know that it does not take everyone on earth to bring justice and peace, but only a small, determined group who will not give up during the first, the second, or the 100th gale." Now, I know that it seems easy when the winds of pain and sorrow blow so strongly as they have this summer, to give up, to lose hope, to retreat. And doing so for a time, taking a kind of sabbatical from the torment of the world, may be necessary and healthy. Sometimes we all need a break. As poet Mary Oliver reminds us, sometimes you do not have to be good. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. But let's not retreat too far. Let's not let our despair paralyze us or keep us from saying things that must be said and doing what must be done. Let's not refuse to keep offering our own small, calm acts of love and compassion to those who are hurting. Let's not stop risking being called temperamentally unfit ourselves if doing so will help bring about more love and justice in this world that needs it. This world that needs you. This world that needs us. In a recent post on social media, author Anne Lamott calls us to see the dangers of the world clearly, but also with vision for what yet can be. She writes, "Life has always been this scary here. We have always been as vulnerable as kittens. Plagues and Visigoths, snakes and schizophrenia. Cain is still killing Abel, and nature means that everyone dies. "I hate this," she says. "It's too horrible for words. When my son was 7 and found out that he and I would not die at the exact same second, he said, crying, 'If I had known this, I wouldn't have agreed to be born.'" Don't you feel like that sometimes? She continues, "There is no healing in pretending this bizarre, violent stuff is not going on and that there is some cute bumper sticker silver lining. It's fine if you believe this," she says, "but for the love of God, please keep it to yourself. It will just tense us all up." What is true is that the world has always been this way. People have always been this way. Grace always bats last. It just does. And finally, when all is said and done and the dust settles, which it does, love is sovereign here. Love is sovereign here. And that's why I'm thinking we should be some kind of temperamentally unfit right about now. We should be temperamentally unfit when we see human worth and dignity denied by bigotry and defaced by ignorance. We should be temperamentally unfit when we see wrong posing as right. We should be temperamentally unfit enough to offer acts of resistance in response to hatred and acts of love in response to fear. After all, what good is being temperamentally fit if we won't? Our world needs me. Our world needs you. Our world needs us. This place could be beautiful, right? We could make this place beautiful. Won't you stand as you're able and join in singing hymn number 168?